All right, what a great show. Of course, Crime and Justice Radio. It is every Monday night from 6 to 7 o'clock. Bruce Barquette and Aida Leisenring from the great firm Barquette FC. And they have done some job. Each and every week, they give you just riveting guests, including last week. I couldn't wait to hear the Amanda Knox interview, and it was great. It really was. We welcome Bruce and Aida to the program. We say good morning to both. Well done last Monday, I got to tell you. That was a fantastic interview. You know, it was to the point as if Amanda Knox was so at ease, really recounting some of the events from yesteryear. Aida, I'll start with you on this. I mean, it really was. She felt right at home as far as everything going on. You know, the roller coaster ride of the justice system as far as how she was right in the center of it all. And it almost seemed like, you know, a scapegoat. And Amanda Knox was there, even though, you know, she wasn't there as far as that murder of the roommate and everything else. But, man, I'll tell you, that was a great interview to have. Good morning to both.
Thank you. Good to be on your show. Happy belated Father's Day. My dad actually tuned in to Amanda Knox, and he said, what's amazing, because he was telling his buddies about our show, he said, what's amazing is a lot of people still think she's guilty. And I think it's a very subjective analysis. I look at Amanda Knox as someone that could be me, someone who played sports, someone who went to college, someone who I could be friends with, right? So I was rooting for her the whole time and trying to pick apart the prosecutor's case. I gave her that presumption of innocence. Other people watched the media reports, and especially in Italy, where we forget Italians during that time period have a different impression of American foreign exchange students. They look at them as wild, as partiers, as someone who they don't necessarily relate to. So I think that in our interview with Amanda, it felt like I was talking to a friend with somebody that had been through something that, you know, really barely anybody in the world has been through.
Bruce, you did with a great point there. It was almost as if, you know what? Here's an American girl who fit the stereotype, and you know what? Let's bring her in. And she's right. Aida's right. It could happen to anybody in that type of situation, and that happened to Amanda Knox. I mean, it really is startling when you look at the backstory and everything else, how it unraveled.
It did, but this is a story that's all too common in the United States as well. I mean, every person who's been exonerated, say, in the last 10 years, go back and look at the reporting of their trial, of their arrest, of their conviction, and you'll see the same kind of biased media that just exploits the individual, twists every fact, every aspect of the person into a storyline that's consistent with what the prosecutors say. It is a difficult story to hear from Amanda Knox because, of course, she was in a foreign country, and all that much more difficult to kind of prove her innocence. But ultimately, she did, and I don't want to say I guess the bias of people that still think she's guilty is also there for people who have been exonerated in this country. Talk to Marty Tankwell, somebody most people on Long Island know about. There are still individuals who will tell you that Marty killed his parents, which is just ridiculous if you know the case. But people still think it because that it's so ingrained in the culture, in the reporting for so many years that it's hard for people to go back on.
Yeah, you're right. Perfect example there as far as Marty Tankwell is concerned. But it's amazing to me, Aida, especially when you had a known burglar as what Rudy, I think his last name, if I'm mispronouncing, I apologize, Rudy Gaudet, a known guy, a known criminal, and the discovery, and you're looking at, you know, it's not like they didn't have anything there. They had bloodstained fingerprints of somebody here on the possessions of Meredith Kircher, which was amazing to me to find out in this story. And, of course, this guy was later found guilty of murder. You know, it's not like they didn't have anything there. They had evidence in place with the bloodstained fingerprints, which was amazing to me.
He not only made a devastating admission, which was I was in the apartment and I heard the murder. Okay. His fingerprints, his DNA was scattered all over her room. He had no relationship with her. He fled the country upon, you know, media news of her murder. And he was convicted and he did 13 out of the 16 years he was sentenced to. And despite appeals, it was never overturned. And yet, in most households, people don't know about him, but they know about Amanda Knox.
Yeah, it really is. It's just unbelievable. It's quite a story, really. And the other thing I picked up, Bruce, was the city where this young lady was murdered, in her home, by the way. It's known for, you know, very large student populations and college universities, that type of thing. A lot of Americans and everything else visit go there, we know. But the city where this woman was murdered, which was Perugia, they had not reportedly had a murder in over two decades. And I find that to be a fascinating part of this whole thing, too. Perugia has not seen one in 20 years, Bruce.
That is an unbelievable statistic for Americans to comprehend, right? Because our murder rates are so high, even in the most affluent communities. So this was really, it tells you why the incident, the murder of Amanda Knox got so much attention in Italy, because it was so, so unbelievably different and unusual. You had an attractive American who was accused or involved somehow in the murder of a roommate. It was something made for the tabloids, and the tabloids exploited it, and they exploited her.
Crime Justice Radio, every Monday night, ladies and gentlemen, at 6 o'clock. Aida, line us up tonight. Who do we have?
Well, speaking of murder rates and times of high crime, we have Thomas Hargrove, who's a retired Washington, D.C.-based investigative journalist. He's also a former White House correspondent. And math and statistics are in his blood. His parents, I think, were mathematicians. And he's developed an algorithm. His website is the Murder Accountability Project. He's developed an algorithm that's capable of detecting serial killers who target multiple victims using similar methods of killing within a geographic area. And he has organized over more than 700,000 homicides into 100,000 clusters. And you can literally go on his website and look at Suffolk County and look at, you know, Manhattan and figure out not only how many patterns there are and how many murders there have been, but whether or not they're being cleared by law enforcement, whether or not they're actually getting solved. And what's interesting is his algorithm detected the Gilco Beach serial killings. I'll group them because it may be more than one individual responsible for that, before there were really major headlines about it. So he is fascinating, and he can tell us true stats about crime today, which is a huge concern, especially in New York.
Well, in an essence, you look at an algorithm that uses a lot of this data, right? And you're trying to identify clusters of murders with, I guess, the probability of containing these serial-type killings. I mean, that is a fascinating... Listen, I think a Gilgo right off the bat here. So, interesting how that was formulated, that all by an algorithm, Mr. Barquette. That's unbelievable. It really is.
It truly is. And one of the things that he'll highlight is the percent of unsolved murders has skyrocketed in the last several decades. That the police are less and less likely to solve murders than they were, say, in the 1960s. And he's taken these unsolved murders and put them together and developed this mathematical formula to determine whether or not they're from or likely from one or two individuals. And police departments across the country are starting to use his data and his algorithm to investigate and hopefully solve crimes. And the other thing he'll talk about is the number of unreported murders. And when we say unreported, it's not that no police department on the planet knows somebody died or the family members don't know. It's that these murders don't get reported to a national database to be analyzed. So the murder happens, the local departments investigate it, solve it or don't, but doesn't get reported properly to the FBI and for crime statistics. And that's critical to analyzing whether or not one or more individuals are involved in crimes. And he's actually, the Murder Accountability Project is actually suing the federal government. Because it turns out the federal government, the FBI, Bureau of Indian Affairs, do not report murders on federal land. So of all the murders that have taken place, the states have a legal obligation to report them. But the FBI and Bureau of Indian Affairs don't. And so you had this massive number of murders that are taking place that have gone unanalyzed. It is going to be a fascinating show for people interested in mathematics or serial killers.
See, I didn't know that. So it, so a lot of this has gone unreported over the years and decades. When it was was there a timeline in which that was to happen? Did it become cemented in law? That type of thing. Should it have been a common practice? What would have been the protocol from way back?
It should have been. But an acquaintance of his said, "Would you come and look at a Native American reservation and take a look? We have these murders. We don't know what's going on." And in his process of analyzing that, he found out that they weren't being reported to the national database. So nobody knew that this was happening on a kind of a macro scale. And from that, his project or his murder accountability project, his group, is actually suing the federal government right now. Cases pending. Forced them to properly report these murders on federal land. It really starts off, you know, if you're unless you're an actuary or a mathematician, your eyes kind of roll back in your head when he starts talking about the analysis. But if you listen a little bit, you find out that it's critically important, and that what he's been able to do is just unbelievable. And finally, police departments are sitting up and taking notice, because he's gone to them and said, basically banging down their doors saying, look, you have a serial killer. You have, you know, X number of unsolved murders. These murders were committed by one or two people. They're not random murders, and here's how I know it. He analyzes all different aspects of the murder, the age, the gender of the victim, the race, the method of death, all of this. And he's able to say, these group of people have been killed by the same person. And it's helped police departments to investigate it, because if they can solve one, they end up identifying a serial killer. And obviously, you want to identify these people and get them off the street before they kill again.
I'll get a last one on this. And that, you know, it just seems the technology advancement now is getting to the point where, you know, listen, you don't want to say the edge is on investigation right now, but you love what you're seeing here as far as the science, you know, and I go back to the Vetrano killing in Howard Beach, Vetrano, the young lady who was strangled and murdered by Chanel Lewis, the 20-year-old, I believe at the time, if memory serves me correct, and they used an advanced type of technology to track this killer down. But it seems that the trends now are coming back into the favor of investigation, because that's what you need in this day and age. You know, listen, you could tell me you got cameras everywhere and everything else, but it's good to see at least some of the tech coming into play here as far as the crimes are concerned.
Well, that's what was actually extremely fascinating to me, because as a criminal practitioner, I thought, oh boy, it's a lot harder for people to successfully commit crimes and escape prosecution, because we have cell site tower data. The prosecutors often do search warrants of people's phones. There's, as you say, street cameras everywhere. I mean, we're essentially living in a Big Brother universe. They can find out the internet searches, your text messages, and so forth. But yet, as an exercise, I went on his murder accountability project, and you can actually scroll down and limit it to New York, Suffolk County, you know, and by the year. And I saw that between 2018 and 2019, the clearance rate, meaning how many murders were actually solved in Suffolk County were 53%, which is shockingly low to me in an age where we have such advanced technology. And the example you gave, I forgot the woman's name who was murdered. She was someone who the media fell in love with the story. She was attractive. She was somebody's daughter. The father was very outspoken. And so there was pressure on law enforcement to solve it. But technology only gets you halfway there. And one of the problems that we're seeing more and more is law enforcement and prosecutorial misconduct. And so if you have all the right, you know, evidence, but you withhold some of it or you don't tell the entire story, just the narrative that you want to give, you may not get the right perpetrator. You may not get any perpetrator. So he is fascinating and sort of thrown off my view of how investigations are conducted in 2020 and beyond.
Toronto, her name, yeah. That was some case, no question about it. Again, that technology that brought into play here, you know, there was a lot of back and forth and the DNA evidence and the proof and everything into play. That was some case with the young lady who was strangled way back, and not way back, not a long time ago, but certainly, you know, you're looking at, what, 5 years ago, had to be. But this 22-year-old was found guilty, and that was after a second trial. Remember that first trial that Lewis was involved in? If memory serves me correct, was ended in a hung jury. So very interesting the way some of these things develop as far as the courtroom is concerned. So that'll be an interesting one tonight. I'll be listening again. You have to, because they have such a great guest, Thomas Hargrove, tonight at 6 on Crime and Justice Radio. Aida, Bruce, great stuff. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
I will have a later dinner tonight, as always, on a Monday because of you guys.
It's the longest day of the year. So.
Yeah, listen, it's well worth it, though. That was a great interview. I got to tell you, I was at my desk, and I couldn't leave the desk. I wanted to hear the end of the interview with Amanda Knox. Good stuff. Bruce and Aida, Crime and Justice Radio, of course, from the great firm Barkhead Epstein. Thanks again so much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Bye.
You got it.